It is a great pleasure to welcome to Asian Investing Summit 2024, VP Rajesh and Saurabh Basrar. VP is Managing Partner and Portfolio Manager at Banyan Capital Advisors, and Saurabh is a Portfolio Manager at Banyan. VP, of course, has been with us in the past. His presentations have added great value to the MOI Global community. And I am grateful that today we have both VP as well as Saurabh. Just by way of introduction, VP has been in the capital markets since 1991, first as an IT consultant and then as an investment banker for more than 10 years, specializing in mergers and acquisitions. During his banking career with JP Morgan Chase, Deutsche Bank, Piper Jaffray, and Thomas Weisel Partners in New York and San Francisco, VP focused on technology, media, telecom, and healthcare sectors and completed transactions worth more than $27 billion. VP relocated to India in 2007 and started reinvesting in the Indian stock market from 2008 onward. He founded Banyan Capital Advisors in New Delhi in 2011 to manage outside capital using investment principles espoused by the likes of Graham, Buffett, Munger, Klarman, and Lynch. A VP is an MBA from the University of Michigan with distinction and has a BE honors degree from BITS Pilani in India. Saurabh has 15 years of experience in portfolio management and equity research. His prior experience includes positions at Fidelity, A.T. Kearney, and Citibank. Saurabh is a rank holder chartered accountant, member of the CFA Institute, and a graduate of Sri Ram College of Commerce. He's also the author of the best-selling book, Masterclass with Super Investors. It's truly a great pleasure to have both of you with us here today. I very much look forward to your presentation and would now like to turn it to you. Please go ahead.
Thanks, John. We are delighted to be here at the Asian Investing Summit and grateful for the opportunity to present an idea with the folks today. The disclaimer slide is pretty usual and it's there for everybody to see. This for us is an opportunity to share our learnings and present an investment idea. And obviously, please consult your investment advisor before you take any buy and sell decision. So moving on, just to give you a quick overview of the firm today, I'm very delighted to say that we have grown significantly over the last 20 years, and overall we have total assets of almost $100 million, out of which in our PMS, which is sort of separately managed account business, we are managing almost 15 million. And more importantly, both Saurabh and I are invested alongside with our PMS investors with our own capital, and that's also almost $5 billion portfolio. And in addition, we also have a wealth advisory business where some of our clients have asked us to look at their asset allocation, et cetera, and that's another capital pool of 47 million. In terms of what we offer to our clients, we have three strategies. Enhanced portfolio, which is essentially a flexi cap strategy where we look at small cap, large cap, and mid cap in India. But the focus is on absolute return over a 3 to 5 year time horizon. And Saurabh runs that particular strategy. Banyan Yield Plus is something I manage personally, which is investing in the stocks that are going some type of corporate event, whether it may be a merger, demerger, delisting, special dividend, and anything where we think there could be significant value unlocking over a let's say, 1 to 3 year time horizon. Typically, it takes 1 to 2 years. And the last one, which is our flagship, which is our oldest strategy, is Banyan India Portfolio, which is where we are focused on small and mid cap. And given the ebullient market in India, we decided to close this strategy for new investors from January 1 earlier this year. And as and when, you know, markets calm down a bit, in our opinion, then we will reopen it to the new investors. So among these three strategies, we are managing almost $50 billion for our investors. And the interesting thing, John, is that now for all the PMS managers in India, the entire data is available on this APNI website. The link is available here. And APNI is essentially the Association of Portfolio Managers of India. And SEBI has decided to make sure all the portfolio managers which are registered with SEBI in India, which is a requirement, all that performance figures, et cetera, is available on this APNI's website. So with that background, I'm going to skip the next two slides because, John, you have covered that. But just stopping on Saurabh's bio, I would just highlight that this Masterclass with Super Investors is a fantastic book that Saurabh has written with Vishal. And it profiles some of the most successful investors in the Indian stock market. And one should take a look at it to continue their learning from what others have done successfully in the market. So moving on to the idea, we are going to talk about GSCL Textile. As the name indicates, it's in the textile business, but it is currently focused only on the spinning side of the value chain. In the Indian stock market yesterday, it closed at 85 rupees per share, and the market cap is just shy of $100 million. So before we go into the details, let us just give you the thesis upfront. We think GSCL Textile represent a very wonderful asymmetric risk where the reward are at least twice of the potential downside over the next 2 to 3 year time frame. And the reason we are excited about this idea is because the entire textile industry, and specifically the spinning industry, is coming out of a worst down cycle that one has seen. And we'll talk more about that over the last 12 to 18 months. So it peaked in, let's say, 2 years ago. And then it saw a very significant downturn last year. And now it is gradually coming out of that. What we like about GSCL is that it completed its large CapEx program very recently, which is likely to drive the growth for next 2 years. So not only you have the tailwind of sectoral fortunes changing, you will have extra kicker from the CapEx that has been done in the past, in the recent past. The other element that we like about GSCL business is that they are focusing on the premium segment of cotton yarn. As we'll talk more about it, it's a very commoditized industry. And to the extent you can focus on the high-end business, you are going to have a better profitability. One of the reasons we like this business a lot is because of the management. Saurabh will talk more about it in detail, but this management has not only shown tremendous execution skills, but the capital allocation has been phenomenal over the last several years, almost a decade. And that's why, even though it's a commodity type of business in a very mundane industry, we are betting on the jockey to not only turn around this business and improve the margins, but also add tremendous value through premiumization and other strategies. From the financial standpoint, they have a very clean balance sheet with a negligible net debt on the books as of now. And lastly, of course, the valuation is very attractive. As I said, you know, we are looking at the bottom of the cycle here, or we are past the bottom of the cycle, but somewhere in the trough still. And therefore, it makes a very attractive proposition to think about this business as an investment. And I think I should just say this, that we and our clients are invested in this stock, so our views are somewhat biased. On the next page, before we talk about the business, just a very quick snapshot about the industry. So on the top, you can see what are the processes that are followed and what is the output is in the second figure. So essentially, we are focused on the spinning part of the process value chain. As you go from raw material to ginning to spinning to weaving and then processing and then the garment, the company that we're talking about, GHCL Textile, is primarily focused on spinning. And the output that they have is yarn, which corresponds to spinning. Of course, you start with cotton, jute, or silk, or wool. In case of GHCL, the raw material is cotton. And then you go to all the way to a final garment and apparel that we all wear. Now, what's interesting about the Indian market is that you have cotton, which is the largest because it is grown quite a bit in India. And then you have the man-made fibers, whether it is polyester, nylon, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the two primary segments in textile. And as we most people will know, it's a very capital intensive business and a commoditized industry, right? So that's the nature of the business context that we are looking at. However, the cotton is less commoditized, primarily because it's a natural product and therefore, you know, being grown in India, we have some kind of competitive advantage in this industry. On the next slide, so GHCL Textile has two manufacturing units, which both are located in Tamil Nadu. And in terms of their capacity, they have around 2.25 lakhs of ring spindles and then other varieties of spindles, which they use to produce high quality yarns like Giza, Supima, Australian. And these are different varieties of yarn that they manufacture, which are more on the premium end, as I mentioned. And they're trying to increase their production more and more on that side. And as we have mentioned here, 50% currently is coming from these type of products. Around 90% of their business is selling to the domestic fabric guys. So very little export at this point in time. From the standpoint of their ESG quotient, 70% plus of their power requirement is coming from their own green energy, which they have a captive plant and they plan to put some more. And that has been done through a 360 crore capex that they have done in the last 3 years, in which they have added the about 40,000 spindles more. And as I said, they are using more and more green energy, and part of that capex has gone into putting a solar power capacity. So from the, as I mentioned earlier, that this management team is what we are most excited about because they have always been minority shareholder friendly, their capital allocation has been fantastic, and obviously they have executed extremely well. Now, what is the history of GHCL Textile? It used to be, it's actually about a 100-year-old business, which was acquired by the current GHCL Textile management and the promoters in 2002. And at that time, it had only 65,000 of spindles. And then over the next 6 years, it was increased to 140,000 spindles. And you can see from 2008 in the lower part of the chart, they have continued to do capex and then kept increasing the capacity. Now we fast forward to 2022 and 2023. There the capacity was at 225,000, and at that point in time, the management decided to separate it from the parent company, which is the GHCL Limited. And let me just spend 2 minutes talking about GHCL. In the top portion of the slide, you can see on the left-hand side, before the demerger, GHCL Limited was the parent company, which was listed both on NSE, which is still listed on both NSE and BSE. It had an inorganic chemical business, primarily soda ash. And then it had the textile business where they were doing spinning, which is what we are talking about. And then they also had the home textile business. So what they did was, they realized as the coming out of COVID, the home textile business did extremely well in the 2020 and 2021. So they sold that business in 2021 and that transaction closed in 2022 and was sold to Indocount at a very nice valuation. So again, it goes back to the point that in the home textile business, they were also ranked company. So they decided to divest that and focus more on the spinning business. So that's, and then this spinning business also, they decided that now it has reached a certain scale and therefore they should demerge that. So last year, the demerger got completed on April 1st. And since then, it is an independent listed company. So that just gives you a sense of GSCL Textile, a little bit about the industry. And with that, let me hand over it to Saurabh, who's going to talk a little bit more in detail about the numbers and our the management track record and our upside case. Saurabh?
Yeah. Thanks, Vibi. I'll take it from there. So you can see on this slide the financial overview. Now, just the background to it. So since Vibi mentioned GHCL Textiles recently got demerged from GHCL Limited, so the data is not available for the last 10 years. We've just taken the data which has been given by the company. So as you can see, the company GHCL Limited, earlier it was just a division of the GHCL Textiles, earlier was just a division in GHCL Limited, was doing close to about 600-700 crores of revenue, which went up during FY23 to close to about 1,000 crores. And that is the time during which they also completed their capex, the recent capex. Now, the EBITDA margins for the textile business have been in the range of 16-17% in the last 10 years, right? So that sort of is the range. And the maximum these margins went was to 27% in FY22. And the minimum was next year in FY23 at 6.8%. So last 2 years saw the maximum amount of volatility in the margins ever for this business, which is close to 20 plus years old now, right? Now, the reason for the margin volatility largely has been the high cotton prices. So as you can see in this slide, that the cotton prices went up from close to 100 to 271 and then sort of back to 160 in the span of the last 2.5 years. And also, you can see the spread between the cotton and the yarn prices, sort of that also had a similar trajectory. So that's the reason the companies ended up having very high profitability during the period when the cotton prices were going up. And then when cotton prices fell, they were largely left with high cost inventory. And also during that time, the demand was sort of soft in the last 1.5 years compared to the pent-up demand that had happened just post-COVID, largely in the big international markets, right? So just talking about the company a little more in detail. So the current revenue run rate for this business is about 1,000 crores. They are currently at 95-97% utilization. Now, while the utilization is close to maximum, but the company can still increase revenues to 1,400 crores with the current capacities, primarily by the product mix change. So because of softer demand in the last, let's say, 12 to 15 months, they have downgraded the product mix and they are selling yarn, which is relatively cheaper. So as sort of the industry turns and they move back to the high quality yarn, so the revenue itself can go up by 30-40% from the current run rate. So that's largely what will lead to the change in delta change in revenue. The balance, it has a very clean balance sheet with about 1,300 odd crores of equity and zero net debt, very minimal sort of gross debt at 60 crores. And now also the company will add another 25,000 spindles and augment their solar power capacity in the next 12 to 18 months, which will cost close to about 200 crores. Part of it will be internally funded depending on the cash flow generation, and the remaining would be taken as debt. So there will be some leverage to fund this capex, but even let's say if it is at 100 to 150 crores, still it will be minimal on a 1300 crore of equity. So we are still talking about close to, let's say, 0.1 times, which again is a relatively very less. So it doesn't really change the structure of the balance sheet much. On the strategic plan, which has been disclosed by the company plans to vertically integrate into knitted and woven finished fabric, which have superior margins compared to sort of spinning. And they also plan to expand the product basket and increase the spinning capacity by 50%. Sort of they're adding 25,000 spindles in the next 12 to 18 months is sort of partly towards that journey. And they will also increase the energy portfolio from current 62 megawatts to 75 megawatts, which will eventually cater to 85% of the energy requirements. And sort of as previously mentioned, the long-term EBITDA margins for the business, they see in the range of 17 to 20% versus historical range of 16 to 17%. So VPF a couple of times mentioned that that the bet also one of the major aspects is about the management here. So Mr. R.S. Jalan, he is the managing director of GSCL Limited, and now he is also on the board of GSCL Textiles post the demerger. His background, he joined GSCL Limited in 2002 and he was elevated to the MD's position in 2006. And he's been instrumental in turning around the company. Now, just to give you a sense of how the company has changed, if you look at the table on the right-hand side, now in 2014, and this is on the pre-demerger basis, when GSCL Limited had the soda ash business, the textile business, and the textile spinning business, and the home textiles business, right, all together in that company. The company was doing a profit of 108 crores. The market cap of the company at that time was 338 crores and the debt was close to 1450 crores. So it was very highly levered and even on the debt equity basis, it was close to 2.2 times, right? Now in the last 10 years, the business has generated cash to the tune of 5,000 crores. Right. Sort of you can look at this 5,000 crore in context of where the market cap or let's say the profits were 10 years back. Out of this 5,000 crores, they have given dividends and buybacks of close to 800 crores. They have repaid all their debt and they have close to 400 or 450 crores in cash. And they have funded all their capex of close to 2,500 crores from internal cash generation. And today, the company on a post-demerger basis, which is just GSCL Limited, and obviously if you add the market cap or the value of GSCL Textiles to it for a like-to-like comparison, which will be even higher, the market cap is close to 5,000 crores and they are doing a PAT of 700 crores. They are debt-free with net cash of 400 crores and the equity or shareholder funds is close to 3,000 crores. So again, this is how the company has been transformed in the last 10 years. And they have done all the right things in terms of how they have allocated capital, how they have been minority shareholder friendly in terms of paying out dividends, doing buybacks opportunistically. On the GSCL textile side, one of the important aspects about the continuity of the top management, the CEO of that business has been with the company for more than 20 years. So he had joined in 2004, which is just after when GSCL Limited had acquired the textiles business. And the technical head also has been there for 10 years and the operational head has been there for more than 6 years. So what we have is a great set of people who have been with the business for a very long time, who understand the industry well, and who largely have been able to grow this business quite profitably in the last 10 to 15 years. On this slide, we have shown just some industry comps. So along with GSCL Textiles, we have another three companies which largely are in the cotton sort of cotton spinning space, which is Ambika Cotton Mills, Nitin Spinners, and Satluj Textiles, and also sort of from a similar business standpoint, means Ambika is sort of similar, but Nitin and Satluj are relatively bigger from a business standpoint. Now, in this list, Ambika is the gold standard because Ambika does very niche business, which has higher profitability and far more consistency compared to relatively, let's say, large part of the textile chain, wherein the volatility in margin is much higher. So the important point to see here is, if you look at the 10-year average EBITDA margin for these companies, so Ambika is at the highest at 20%, followed by GHCL Textiles and Nitin at around 15 to 17%, while Satluj business is relatively inferior, with 10-year long-range margin at close to about 11%, right? And again, GHCL and Ambika are debt-free, with Ambika having a significant amount of cash and cash equivalents on its books. And both Nitin Spinners and Satluj are relatively levered with close to 1x debt equity. On the valuation side, the PE ratio in case of GHCL Limited might not give the right picture, since the margin impact for GHCL Limited in the last 1.5 years has been far more compared to Ambika and Nitin. The better metric to look at would be here price to book. So GHCL Limited trades at half time or 0.6 times price to book, compared to 1.7 times for Nitin Spinners and 1.1 times for Ambika. Again, Ambika, as I said, is a great company, but there is no growth. The last 10 years, they've been only able to sort of double their business. So Ambika largely has a growth challenge. Otherwise, definitely it would have been one of the companies to look at. So largely this sort of gives you a perspective around the financial and valuation comps. And we see, just going forward, on the current valuation metric, largely, I think we have covered these in terms of the market cap, net debt, EV numbers, shareholder equity, which is 1,300 crores, which largely is invested close to about 1,100 crores in fixed assets and 290 crores in net working capital, and with a price to book of 0.6 times. The table below gives the different scenarios over the next 3-year periods of how the investment could play out. So in the base case scenario, we think on a 1600 crore revenue, even if they do 16% margins, which again is on the lower end of their range of the last 10 years, the company will do a PAT of close to about 135 crores, and there's an upside of close to 50 to 100%. In terms of, depending on what multiple sort of it trades at, again, 9 to 12 is sort of conservatively one takes as a range. So that's the base case scenario. In a bull case, the margins can be close to 19%, again, on the higher end of the range, in which the company itself would do close to about 200 crores of profit and 250 crores of cash flow. In that case, the upside can be 2 to 3x. And in a bear case scenario where we think, let's say, there is no industry tailwind and the company's margins actually go down from the long range 16-17% to just 13%, the company still will end up doing close to about 70 crores of cash flow. And obviously, in that case, one, there is dead money risk. We won't make any money and we might maybe lose sort of marginally 10-20%, right? So all in all, we see this as an opportunity wherein there's high probability to sort of make anywhere between, let's say, 1x to 1.5x if sort of things play out. And if it doesn't happen, then the downside is limited, and largely it's the dead money risk downside. And given how cheap the business is and given how the business has done in the last 10, 15 years in terms of the growth and financial metrics, the probability is fact that they should be able to do quite well. And So in this slide, we've just taken the sort of how the stock has traded since it got listed. The stock got listed somewhere in June last year. And since its listing, largely the stock has traded between the 70 to 90 rupee range. And so again, the idea behind sort of highlighting this is that last 1 year has been the time wherein the company has gone through the worst financial metrics, wherein sort of the profitability has collapsed and company is hardly sort of breaking even or just doing marginal profits. And during this time, the stock sort of largely has found support or not gone below 70, right? So again, the high probability is that there is where we think the bottom is, and directionally as company starts doing well, so money is to be made. Again, in this slide, since it's a demerger, there has been, as you can see, the FIIs have sold close to about 5%. DIIs have sold again close to 4%. Their shareholding has come down from 10.7 to 6.1 in the last quarter. So the selling by both FII and DIIs has been absorbed by the public, which is again sort of expected because after the demerger, this business was much smaller compared to the pre-demerger GHCL Limited. So a lot of institutional investors would have sold. And so that selling also has got absorbed, and the shareholder base has consolidated in terms of number of shareholders also going down from 75,000 to 64,000 shareholders now. So again, sort of this sort of shows that the shareholder base is consolidating, and you have sort of longer term shareholders sort of buying into the stock. In terms of the key risks that we see to our thesis in GHCL Textiles, so one definitely is from an industry perspective that any major down trend in the market, which could be, let's say, any demand destruction from major markets like United States in case of any recession, that obviously will impact the overall industry. And second is, again, high volatility in cotton prices could again be a challenge because in case of volatility, again, means in terms of company to company, how they are positioned for that will matter. I think that's largely in terms of our presentation, and I guess we can open to Q&A now.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, VP and Saurabh, for the presentation. Maybe we can just start with one of those last risks there, the volatility in cotton prices. I'm wondering if there's anything the company can do to insulate itself a little bit from that volatility.
See, in terms of volatility in cotton prices, so cotton is a yearly crop, right? And so largely, I think that's the nature of the industry. To some extent, yes, you can, but I think largely that's part and parcel of the business. But let's again see, volatility in cotton prices will have an impact and does have an impact, but that will be relatively short. So let's say 1 or 2 years, but let's say if you take a longer term view, it sort of balances out. But again, I think that's something which is a industry, overall industry thing. You really cannot sort of do something which can take away major part of that.
And I think just to add to what Saurabh is saying, John, that this high volatility that we saw in the prior 2 years was primarily COVID induced. And I don't think we will continue to see that kind of highs and those kind of lows that we saw in the prior 2 financial years. Because see, ultimately, it is governed by you know, how much capacity is being added in the spindle side as well. And partly it is obviously weather is a big factor, right? And since the market over the last 5 years has been moving away from a particular area in China, you could think that yes, then the prices have sort of started moving up a little bit more. But the concern is that it will start to normalize because, like any other commodity, there will be more farmers who will start planting cotton in India if prices continue to be high. But in the last 2 years, we heard stories about people hoarding, the traders hoarding a lot of cotton, etc., which I don't think is sustainable in the next 2 to 3 years. So that's why, you know, it is a risk which has to. But do we worry about that a lot? Probably not so. That's why, you know, the demand side is more important going forward in our minds.
And
Correct. And
on
also,
yeah.
sorry. And I'll also like to add, see, while high volatility in cotton prices, as VP said, what happened in the last 2 years was unprecedented. But right now, I think where we are is that it is more favorable because the cotton prices and the margin profiles are getting better, right, for companies from the down cycle.
that's very helpful. Thank you. On the demand side, can you talk a little bit more about the major customers and end markets?
In terms of textiles, means the domestic market, let's say if we talk about, let's say, cotton textiles, India domestic market is a huge market. And then obviously you have export markets. Again, they are categorized depending upon the quality, like a lot of high quality cotton textiles and fabrics and sort of garments go down to sort of US, Europe. And within India, again, it's a very, very big and fragmented market. Right, but cotton is one of the most sort of consumed natural fabrics that is there, and so it's relatively very fragmented. But at the same time, from a geography standpoint, US is a big export market or a consumption market globally.
And since GFCL Textile is only doing spinning, right, they are not making the final product. That's why they are supplying to the guys who are either making fabric and then giving it to the final garment manufacturer or directly to the garment manufacturer who is also making fabric, right? So, in that sense, they are part of that value chain, even though they are not exporting directly. So let's say if the consumer demand goes down in the US, that will definitely will have an impact on GSCL's prospects, even though it is not directly exporting to the US.
Understood. And so they have completed major CapEx. How do you see the cash generation going forward? And in terms of capital allocation, what kind of mix can we expect between, you know, reinvestment in the business versus return of capital?
See, in terms of they already have outlined their plans to invest 200 crores, both in spinning capacity to buy a sort of add spindles and also on the green energy side. So out of this 200 crores, they will use whatever is generated internally and the rest will be financed. So I guess at least in the near term, they do have plans lined up for expansion, which will consume sort of any profits that they generate. And so largely, I don't think there's any major return of capital we are talking about at this stage because the company is in the growth stage here. I think that sort of I think answers the question.
And I'm wondering whether longer term you would see the company perhaps diversify its business in any way or move into higher value-added areas over time?
Again, the company does plan to forward integrate into as forward integrate into knitted and woven finished fabrics, right? But I think that is once they have sort of increased their spinning capacity, because that sort of would sort of help them sort of add to the raw material that they would need for the final products. And sorry, I'm sort of, I think lost your question. I lost. What, so can you repeat the question again?
Well, I'm just wondering to what extent they will try to move into higher value-added areas where they can have more of a competitive advantage than in, the core business, which seems quite commoditized.
Okay. See, one, the core business is so textile as a business is commoditized, but within that, cotton textile is relatively sort of less commoditized because if you look at even the margin sort of history, now generating 16-17% EBITDA margins over a 10 odd years, I mean, given the data, and I'm assuming that even longer than that, is something sort of which demonstrates that it's not a pure commodity business, right? That's one. And secondly, in terms of going forward, adding knitted and woven finished fabrics, or let's say fabrics, you go from spinning into fabric, which is forward integration, while you're also adding capacity on your spinning side, which will help you sort of put the raw material on the fabric side for internal consumption as well as for outside sales as you're doing currently. So that has been the stated strategy direction for the company. And yes, that should one lead to company diversifying just from pure spinning, and also on a consolidated basis, a better ROE and a margin profile.
And within spinning, I think, as I mentioned earlier, John, that right now 50% of their revenue is coming from value-added products where they are doing higher-end and premiumized yarns. Now, the second part of the strategy is also to continue to increase that premiumization portion. In fact, because the industry was going through the downturn, so over the last 12, 18 months, that portion has come down. Right, but now as the market recovers, they will start to increase that proportion more. So the mix also will change from the premium versus regular yarn within cotton.
Okay, wonderful. That's very helpful. Thank you. That does it for me. I would just encourage MOI Global members to feel free to follow up with their own thoughts or questions. Thank you so much, VP and Saurabh, for joining us today and sharing this investment thesis with the MOI Global community. We truly appreciate it.
Thanks,
Thank
John. And we are very happy to be here today. Appreciated the time.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.